When the red, red robin comes bob, bob, bobbing along, along. There'll be no more sobbing when he starts throbbing his old sweet song. Now wake up, you sleepyhead. Get up, get out of bed. Cheer up, the sun is red. Live, love, laugh and be happy. What if I've been blue? Now I'm walking through fields of flowers. Rain may glisten, but still I listen for hours and hours. I'm just a kid again, doing what I did again, singing a song. When the red, red robin starts bob, bob, bobbing along.
The following hour of Martha Norwalk's Animal World is brought to you by Jones & Company Pets. Their goal is happy, satisfied customers enjoying happy, healthy pets.
Hey, good morning, y'all. I'm Martha Norwalk, and welcome you to the second hour of this week's edition of Animal World. We're here every Sunday morning, 9 a.m. to noon, right here on Alternative Talk, AM 1150. You can tune us in on the radio dial. You can tune us in on the Internet via streaming audio. That means you can share us with your family and friends around the country, around the world, if they've got Internet access. And the best way to pick up the stream is go to the Animal World website. That would be www.marthanorwalk.com. Click on the Listen Live icon in the upper right-hand corner of the homepage. That will click you through to the 1150 KKNW website. Click on Listen Live again, and that will bring up the instructions that you need to stream the show. All right, it is the first Sunday of March. Yikes, already. And that means it is a Behavior Training and Healing Sunday with Martha. We are going to get into our training segment of today's show with Nose Work for Dogs in just a moment. We're going to finish up with news about animals and follow up with a comment on the story we covered just before the end of last hour. But we didn't have a chance, kind of, because Miriam had to kind of sneak in the middle of the last hour, towards the end of the last hour. And so we didn't quite formally. So I just want to say, Miriam, this is Mike Robert. She's Animal World's production engineer. Mike, meet Miriam.
How do you do, Mike?
I'm doing just fine. How are you this morning?
Thank you. Thank you for having me.
Welcome.
Appreciate that.
And you know Ajie and Kathy brought you in.
Nice to meet you.
And,
thank you.
You know, I have to tell you guys, I forgot to tell you that, did you know, I told you all about my Mac news. Did you know I got here 10 minutes earlier today?
You did?
Than I usually get.
How come I didn't notice that?
Well, because Ajie wasn't here and we were waiting for her.
Okay. Right.
But I got here 10 minutes earlier. And, you know, I actually stayed in bed 10 minutes later than I usually do on Sunday morning. But I got here 10 minutes earlier because I actually left earlier. And, you know, I don't know why.
I have no idea. Why?
Because of my new computer. That's what I realized today. Because I always, you know, when I have to turn, I turn on a computer and I check my email. You know, and that kind of stuff. Because now my Mac is set up. It was so fast. So God,
you're going to have all this time on your hands.
I was 10 minutes early. Oh, so just go figure on that. All right. Now, we're just finishing up with news. Before we get to the good news, I was talking about Westminster. I read a quote from an editorial in the Seattle Times saying that David Fry, who's the director of Westminster now, who used to be local here and was a colleague of mine for many years and was in the studio with me on Animal World for many years. I've been doing this for 17 years, and 10 of that was like on Como, but before he moved to the East Coast to do the Westminster thing. And I knew him as an exhibitor, as a breeder, as a handler, you know, premier of Afghans, and I think his wife might have done something else, but I don't remember. But anyway, Miriam, you know him also. And when that quote of him not supporting shelter dogs, what did you have to say about that?
Well, my view would be based on how I know David, and it's not certainly as long-standing a relationship as what you have, and is more at a superficial level, I guess I would say, but over a good amount of time, that just does not seem like a comment that's congruent with what he's like as a human. I just expect that was probably a misquotation.
Maybe or taken out of context in some way. But I would imagine, because you made a good point. I mean, mixed breeds are now allowed in obedience competition in AKC.
Yes, and in agility as well.
So it just doesn't quite make sense.
It doesn't to me, because he has a real heart for dogs, and that's all dogs.
Yeah. Well, so anyway, I might have to call him up and say, what's up with this?
He'd probably like the clarification made.
Yeah,
because this is his home turf here.
It is. It
I mean, to a great degree.
Okay, we have to wait for the powers that be to be back at the helm. Aha, must be an email.
I'm back.
And it is no fault of Mike's, but, you know, when you guys send me email, it comes. And then, you know, would you think the printer is somewhere? Mike has to, like, run around the block to go find the printer.
Five flights of stairs, you know, 8 locked doors. I got to go through the cafeteria, so, you know, I got to grab me a cup of coffee.
Well, we're going to do good news in a moment. I'm going to do, because this follow-up, this is about Herman the cat that's missing. And remember I told you that Pat and Dave are just so into trying to help find Herman for Jeff that they got Peg in Olympia, you know, our listener, to get involved. And Peg is emailing, said, I'm going out to the dump site early afternoon with Joe, feline friends, to look for Herman. Would like help if someone could give us more specific info on than wooded area. The area is a tree farm. Any chance that could happen? Well, Peg, what Pat told me is that there's a gate that they had to drive the four-wheel truck around, and they went back up and around, and then there's an actual dump site where people dump all kinds of crap. And the truck was dumped at that area where the all the crap is. That's where the truck was. And apparently there's a debris field there of the broken up canopy and all the stuff in the truck that they didn't take. They just threw all over the ground. So if you go around that gate and up, in my mind, it's up an incline, and find the debris field where all the dump site is. That's where the truck was. And that's where Robin saw the robber person pulling Herman out of the truck and tossing him. So I think if you just go back there, you'll find the debris field. Now it says, what would Herman be attracted to? Canford, kibble? Is he more likely to come to Joe or me? You know, he's more likely not to come to either of you. He's more likely to come to Jeff. We really need Jeff out there. Although, if I don't know if you saw the photograph of Jeff, the owner, that Pat had sent to me. Let's see. No way to contact owner because he has, according to Pat, run out of minutes on his replacement phone. No way, apparently, to get truck in there without further damage. If I go around the lock gate, is Herman to the right or the left? I don't know that. Down by the creek in a tree. Well, I was told that when Jeff rescued Herman in the first place, he was a feral cat and Jeff found him by a creek. So the sense was that he would be around the creek in the wooded area. Robin saw him shivering. I think your best bet in that we've been told that he would come back to Jeff, he would come back to the truck. If you hold a visualization in your mind, Peg, of just imagining Jeff and Herman, and if Herman comes out to you, you will take him to Jeff. And if you just keep that in your mind and putting it out there, I think that's the best bet that you have. The worst thing you can do is go out there with your mind full of, oh, God, this isn't going to work. He's not going to come. We'll never find him. That kind of stuff. Hold it in your mind that he's hungry. He comes to you. I know with a lot of cats, if you open a can of food, the sound of the can opening makes them come. If you rattle the kibbles, I would assume that Jeff, being a homeless guy that was living in his truck, was probably feeding dirt cheap cat food, which would probably be kibble from the grocery store. So shaking kibble, that sound might be appealing, but the big thing would be in your mind, C. Herman coming to you and you taking him to his owner and back to his truck. So I hope that helps. Let me know if it doesn't. All right, let's quickly get out of the way the best good news about animals. Get you some sunshine from going up to Monroe this afternoon.
It's light on downtown.
Hey, I see some blue sky.
Not a lot.
Well, we just we're chasing
it. But a little bit helps.
Okay, in the good news, French bulldog adopts 3-day-old piglets. A litter of wild boar piglets found shivering in the cold were brought to an animal sanctuary when they were just 3 days old. The six orphans were immediately greeted by a French bulldog with a ready snuggle and a motherly instinct for caring for them. A worker at the German sanctuary, who thought the piglet's mother had probably been killed by a hunter, said Baby, the bulldog, has been on the job as adoptive parent ever since. She thinks they're her own babies. And the photograph is too cute. You want to see those little piglets there. All right, another wonderful rescue story. Police officer reaches out to help a helpless man and his dogs. And this was a police officer responded to a call about a suspicious vehicle in a neighborhood, you know, just hanging out. And she went to investigate it, and she found a man living in his vehicle with his two German shepherds. Well, this police officer happened to be a dog lover. And instead of arresting him or kicking him out or whatever, she took the time to get to know him and find out. And she said, you know, and he gave her, you know, told her, you know, how he'd lost his job, and after lost his home and all that kind of stuff. And she said, well, why aren't you living in a shelter or someplace? And he said, ma'am, there's no shelter that will take my dogs, and I refuse to dump them. And so, get this, the police officer stepped up, started a campaign. She's in a German Shepherd community online, and they got enough money to get him a place to live and coaching and help with a job and all that kind of stuff. So how cool is that?
That is good news.
That's the way it's supposed to be. And then how about this for rescue? Sturgeon Bay cat owner saves a life. Right after he was adopted, a Sturgeon Bay woman has a lot to be thankful for after her newly adopted cat woke her from an insulin reaction just hours after bringing him home. She and her son had gone to Door County Humane Society to play with cats, not to bring one home. And then they met this Pudding, his name, a big orange cat, lying on a counter. And they decided to adopt him and his brother because parents of these cats had died and they didn't want to separate them. So they took him home, and the same day they took him home, at 9:30 that night, she went to bed. And about an hour and a half later, the cat came to her rescue. Excuse me, this gal had diabetes, and she started to have a seizure. According to her, Pudding planted his weight on her chest, and when he could not wake her up, he began swatting her face and biting her nose. Well, that woke her up enough to yell for her son for help. Okay, now, her yelling, her son, it didn't wake her son. So then Pudding ran into her son's bedroom and jumped on him and woke him up. And so he came and saved the day, and she was saved. And they say that had the cat not done this, she would have died. Mm. And so now they have also now know that... Well, let's see. What does it say? Because he now alerts them to when her blood sugar is low. He sits at her feet and he meows when her blood sugar gets low. So she now has a. Oh, and her doctor had her register the cat as a therapy cat. her doctor said, realistically, you can't be without him. So Jung is registered as a therapy cat. And so he stays with her all the time and alerts her when her blood sugar gets low. So how cool is that?
Very cool.
Mm-hmm.
All right, there we go.
And that's no doubt done by scent.
Uh-huh. Yeah, mm-hmm. And you know, and that's a good thing, Miriam, because now knowing more about probably dog noses and scents than most, their dog sense of smell, or animals' sense of smell, this could apply to cats as well as dogs, is much greater than ours.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. The estimation with a dog's nose is it's somewhere anywhere from 1,000 to 10,000 times more powerful than a human's nose.
1,000 to 10,000?
Yeah. It's kind of hard to quantify, honestly.
Well, yeah. That absolutely. Now, we know that dogs, and of course this would apply to cats, are used for lots of jobs or services that require scenting. Like we know that there's cancer detecting dogs and they can sniff up and down a person and alert if there's a type of cancer. And that's done by their smelling the cancer, aren't they?
Mm-hmm. All over the world, you know, as we're sitting here together talking about this, there are dogs using their sense of smell in service of mankind, you know, whether it's detecting subcutaneous melanoma, you know, looking for brown tree snakes in Guam before they get on planes bound for Hawaii, and, you know, snakes that would completely wipe out the birds, you know, songbird population in Hawaii. Dogs looking for unexploded landmines, for the remains of missing soldiers in Iraq and Afghanistan, looking certainly for drugs, looking for toxic mold, looking for non-toxic mold on wine corks, looking for mushrooms and truffles.
That's right. And that truffle business now has been ramped up considerably with the use of dogs now to sniff out the truffles.
Well, and that's been done in Europe for many, many years. I think people are just finally waking up here that we have native truffles that grow year-round here. But all over the world, and certainly the...
They're even using dogs now. We've reported animals in the news. They're using dogs now to sniff out bed bugs.
Yes, absolutely. Absolutely. I attended a conference in Philadelphia this last September, a three-day conference on dogs detecting bed bugs, which is the latest bane of the East Coast and Midwest, and they say heading our way.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and if for you long-term Animal World listeners, you may remember my friend Colleen McDaniel, who owns the Academy of Canine Behavior in Bothell, and how they many, many years ago trained the first wine cork sniffing dogs to sniff out mold in the wine corks.
There are dogs that are looking for wild animal scat to advanced conservation projects.
Well, that's what we talked about on that, what the dogs that go out in the boats to sniff for
whale scat.
Mm-hmm. You know, well, that's the nice way of saying whale poop. We just call it, I call it whale poop. Anyway, they go, they sniff out whale poop. And remember, because you were wanting to know how they knew that about the whales and stuff, because they collect their scat. And, yeah, so anyway, dogs' noses are used for a lot of things.
Sure.
And being as that, Miriam, and I officially want to welcome Miriam Rose to Animal World. Welcome.
Thank
and
you,
so
Mama.
Glad to have you here.
Thank you.
And since we haven't spoken with you before, can you tell us a little bit about yourself and how you got into this nose work stuff?
Well, I've been involved with dogs all my life, first with German Shepherds as a young girl. A mm-hmm. Series of them. And then as I got older, Giant Schnauzers have been my breed of choice for the last 20, 22 years, I think.
They're grand dogs.
They are something. In 1999, I sort of became compelled or drawn or called to use dogs to help keep children safer in schools. Mm. By taking dogs in to look for drugs and other contraband, including low explosives like handguns and pipe bombs.
So you've been doing dog training?
I've been doing dog training.
All that before that.
Yeah, not so much as a métier, as much as a hobby before that.
Hobby stuff, yeah. Okay.
And then in 2000, opened my own business called Verity Services. And since then, I've been providing drug dogs and explosive dogs and their services to businesses and private homes and schools around the country.
Mm-hmm. Wow. Mm-hmm.
In the last, my drug dogs and I worked anywhere from New Mexico to Maryland. for quite a number of years. My genius giant schnauzer female Echo was my partner, my canine partner for 10 years, and flew in cabin with me all over the country with working dog privileges and probably had more airline miles on her than most humans in this country. And then after 9/11, the call became more for explosives dogs than for drug dogs. I've always been a private contractor. I don't come from law enforcement or from military, so it's been kind of a long, hard road.
Okay, and, now do you have, or did you ever have like a facility where you'd have a lot of dogs and train them and send?
Okay, no, so I don't train them for other people.
Okay, that's
only
what
for my own
use. Okay.
In fact, you know, you really don't have very much control over what happens if you train a dog and sell it.
Well, exactly, sure.
And
sure.
That's not something I can go to sleep at night over.
Well, I don't blame you about that.
And living in the city, my dogs.
So you would just train your own dogs and then hire you and your dog out to do jobs? Is
exactly.
That what?
Oh,
okay.
Exactly.
Okay.
And then in the last seven, almost 8 years, I've been working explosives detection dogs for the Alaska Cruise Lines. First few years for Norwegian Cruise Lines, and then in the last almost 4 years for Princess Cruise Lines. I'm contracted by international firms that send me their dogs to work. For Norwegian, I worked a fabulous German Shepherd and Dynamite Labrador. Both were German imports, and they stayed with me during the season and the off-season. I also worked them in shopping malls during the Christmas seasons looking for explosives at night after the malls closed, regional shopping malls here and in Tacoma and in Olympia. And then the last a few years that I've been working for Princess, I work for a wonderful company out of Canada called Canine Scope. And they provide me with terrific, terrific partners, which are English Springer Spaniels imported from Britain.
Wow.
Look very, very different from our Springers here. Totally different from bench bred Springers. These are low on the leg dogs that are meant to flush birds from under bushes. Go figure. And are tremendous, tremendous working dogs. Just noses to beat the band. Very kind little dogs, very energetic little dogs. And then I've got two male giants that are the offspring of my late drug dog Echo, Brass and Bricks, and one is trained in explosives and the other in narcotics. And they're
so
the next generation.
I'm just a little curious about like the cruise stuff.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, so what do you do? Like when a cruise comes into port, you go down with a dog and sniff
I go down with a pair of dogs. We're working at Pier 91, which is the new beautiful cruise terminal in Seattle, just south of Magnolia and the Magnolia Bridge, and the ships berth there. And the dogs search all of the ship's stores before they're loaded. We search probably 10,000 pallets a season.
Wow.
So everything that's going to be loaded on the ship, except for the money, gets searched by the dogs and tagged with a canine sticker before the longshoremen load it.
How cool is that?
Yeah. Very chaotic, very stressful, demanding, wonderful work. There really is nothing I find like partnering with a dog. And that's what led me actually to canine nose work as a sport, because it's such a natural outgrowth of the detection dog work I've done professionally. What it does is to bring to the pet-owning population the best aspects of detection dog work, the most accessible aspects. You know, you don't have to have special permits or special insurance to keep training aids. Canine nose work, the dogs search out three different botanical oils.
Okay, let's hold up for a minute. Mm-hmm. I want to go back. Mm-hmm. Now, are you actually the creator of canine nose work?
No. It was created in California in 2006 by Ron Gaunt, Amy Herreau, and Jill Marie O'Brien. Ron is a longtime retired canine handler and trainer from the law enforcement world and consults all over the world. And his two compatriots, Amy and Jill Marie, who were handlers for him in his business, devised this sport.
And that was when?
2006.
Okay.
And
I think back when you know, I had competition dogs. And yeah, because I started as a teenager.
Mm-hmm.
Actually, Colleen and I started together, and we both had German Shepherds to start with. And then we got tired of getting beat in the obedience, because really the only thing you could do back then was competition obedience, and or confirmation. And we weren't doing confirmation, but we were doing obedience, and we were getting beat all the time. You know, German Shepherds weren't just performing as well in the comp ring. And so we decided that we'd each get a new dog. And she decided to get something exotic. So she got an Irish Water Spaniel. And I had fallen in love with a Golden Retriever, a local Golden Retriever in competition. And so that's kind of what I was thinking about. She called me up one Saturday morning and said, all right, I ordered my Irish Water Spaniel puppy, and I'll be there in a half hour. I'm picking you up. We're Golden Retriever shopping. And then the first breeder we went to had a litter, and I fell in love. And we were fortunate in that we both got really nice dogs and got into bench showing and confirmation showing as well, but did competition obedience. But then the only other really things you could do back then were field trialing, mm-hmm. and we did that. So we did obedience, field trial, and confirmation with our dogs. And then as time went by, then the next big thing that came was tracking. Mm-hmm. And that's something I never personally got involved with, because there was enough getting out in the country and doing bird stuff and all of that kind of stuff. But with tracking back then, you know, it was nice to be able to teach the dogs to sniff and hunt stuff. But, you know, you were working tracks, laying tracks out in the middle of nowhere, and then you had to sit and wait for tracks to age, and it was just a real pain and took a lot of time to do it. And then some herding started, and then we got, you know, agility going and tricks, and then we got dancing going and all of that kind of stuff. So am I correct in thinking that nose work is kind of the latest competition sport with dogs?
I would say nose work and probably tri-ball.
I don't even know what that is.
That's a whole nother show for you.
All right.
So, that I'm not involved with.
So the guy, the people in California in 06 kind of mm-hmm. created this thing.
Mm-hmm. And the sport has grown tenfold each year.
Okay. And then has it grown into a competition sport
yes.
at this point?
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
Well, all right. So you got involved when?
I first brought Ron Gaunt, the founder, here in September of 09, and I started teaching classes in November of 09.
Okay.
And I've been teaching classes since then. I've probably taught 1,500 classes since then.
Okay. So now you can get into it. So what's the deal? Basically, you teach nose work classes for people, you know, handlers and their dogs. It doesn't matter whether they're purebred or mixed breed or want to compete or not. Anyone can join your classes, right?
Oh, any dog can benefit from this sport, and any owner can benefit from their dog being given the gift of this sport, because a dog's mind is primarily mapped for scent. And if a dog doesn't have an outlet for scent work, whether uh-huh. it's, you know, finding your husband downstairs or your kid out in the backyard or a bone under the couch, or, you know, it's cookies during the day, or, you know, field work or tracking or advanced obedience at the level where dogs are doing scent discrimination. If a dog doesn't have an outlet for its nose, I don't really think a dog can be balanced.
Well, that's
because it's just as though, let's say that you're someone who really loves to read. You know, the human mind is more mapped for vision than uh-huh. for any other sense. And let's say somebody says to you, sorry, Martha, you can never read again. Can't look at this, can't look at that. No, 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 no. Sorry, sorry. That's what we're telling our dogs all the time. Out of the garbage, out of the grocery
yeah.
sack, you know, stay out of my purse, lift your head, you know, don't be dragging your nose along the ground, you know, when I'm walking you. And that really shuts a dog off from fundamentally who a dog is.
And not allowing that. Well, and it's interesting. See, as a behavior therapist and trainer, I don't do competition training anymore, but I work, you know, with people privately in their mm-hmm. home, you know, to help them understand their animal friends solve problems and with dog stuff. One of the games that I teach my clients when they're raising puppies, you know, and young dogs, one of the fun games I teach them is a hide and go seek game,
mm-hmm.
and how to, you know, hide and find toys. It's just for fun stuff. But I find that on down the line, if the dog learns a good hide and go seek game, and then you play that not only with toys and stuff, but you play it with the members of your family, that every once in a while, a case will come along when somebody in the family does get really lost, and the family dog can then go out and find them.
Mm-hmm.
So this is kind of like a really refined version of how to do this. And I also know, as a behavior therapist, sometimes when there are behavior problems with dogs, if you can take the behavior that's getting them in trouble and teach it and then control it, For example, a lot of the biting and aggressive dogs that I deal with are herding breeds. So sometimes in order to solve their bad or unacceptable behavior with aggression and chasing and biting and stuff is that we have to let them do what they really came here to do, and that's herd, and we teach them how to herd properly, and then we put an on and off switch there. So mm-hmm. they learn that you do this here, but not there. And isn't that kind of what you're saying?
Well, I think this is even more fundamental than that, because a herding breed, a field breed, a protective breed, a sit-on-the-lap breed, still the strongest drive for them is to use their noses.
Sure.
When a puppy is first taken out of the hatch and the mucus is cleared off, they're blind and they are deaf, but their noses are working. And actually on a dog's way out of this life into what is next, the very last sense that leaves them is their sense of smell. And so no matter what the breed, no matter what the breed characteristics, it is so intrinsic to who and what a dog is that they have an outlet for that. That we're seeing, and I hear from clients every single day, the incredible benefits that come to their dogs and to their relationships with their dogs because of this. And this is a real partnering. I know you speak, Martha, a lot in your programs about communicating with animals and communicating with dogs. Well, you know, they're all about the nonverbal. And mm-hmm. this is the one activity that a human and dog can do together that is driven by the dog, not by the person. Because even in tracking, a person lays the track, the dog needs to follow it in a prescribed way. This is all driven by the dogs.
And it's fascinating. And the neat thing about this nose work, folks, is that you can get involved, you can get yourself and your dog involved in this just like you were going to obedience school. You know, you're not going out to the back 40 somewhere, and I mean, you actually teach classes all around the area at different training locations,
and
right?
The way that the classes are set up, Martha, for dogs that are, you know, overly reactive to other dogs or to people, dogs that are very shy, each dog and handler come in by themselves. The other dogs are all confined either to crates in another room or to their owner's properly equipped vehicles. So there is total focus on the one handler, the one dog, and the other handlers are watching that team and learning by observation. So the dog doesn't have to worry about, oh, there's another dog in the corner. Whoops, this person is looming too close over me. So for dogs that aren't good candidates for group classes, and there are many of them, we know that, this is the ideal spot for them because it is all about where that dog and that handler are at that given moment. And what I see happen are profound, profound changes in the relationship. And people begin to look at their dogs like, oh, that's who you are.
Okay, now let's talk about some real details about how this works. Now, mm-hmm. I met you the first time because you were teaching a nose work class at Joan Fetty's place mm-hmm. in Duval, mm-hmm. Positive dog
Woodenville.
Training, or Woodenville, mm-hmm. Positive dog training. Mm-hmm. And I had a client who had, you know, a pretty volatile Pleckner border collie, and I came along on general principles just to make sure that the dog didn't eat anybody. Mm-hmm. And he's doing great now. Mm-hmm. But at any rate, it was fascinating to come. That's how my first experience was coming to an actual beginning nose work class that you're teaching. So tell us, you started to tell us what you teach these dogs and like what they learned. So give us some details about when we come to class, what's it all about?
Well, when we first start the first 6 weeks, it's just a matter of letting the dog's hunt drive blossom and mm-hmm. unfold in front of us. And for every dog, that's a very different process. You know, some dogs, even very tough field dogs, have been taught using electronics or other methods to have very tight control by their handlers, and they are unwilling to initiate and won't even put their head in a box. Some dogs are just naturally timid. Some dogs are quite bold and bash into things. Really, your equipment is used, clean cardboard boxes that are on their way to the recycling anyway.
Yeah, because I remember, I think, walking into the room, and mm-hmm. weren't there a bunch of, like, open cardboard yep. boxes, piles, yep. all over the floor?
Yep, with the dog's rewards in them. And for some dogs, the highest reward is a yummy, yummy treat. For some dogs, it's a toy. So we use whatever motivates the dog.
Whatever the
Again,
dog likes best.
It's driven by the dog.
Right.
It's driven by the dog. Some dogs are so shy that I have to just put a flat piece of cardboard with a cookie on it for the dog even to be willing to approach okay. that.
So the first thing you do is you work. It's not It's not like an obedience school where each handler and dog is lined up around the room in a group.
Not at all. You're so right.
When the group, the class starts, the dogs are out in your car.
Yep.
Okay, and the people come in and you educate them first.
Yes, there's a bit of a briefing at the very first class and how we're going to run these repetitions through. And people sign up in an order. And then the first handler goes out and gets their dog, brings the dog in with what they think is going to motivate the dog's best.
And then work specifically with you.
I work individually with each team.
And the rest of us get to sit there and watch
what
you're doing.
And you frankly learn more from watching one another than you do from what a teacher would ever tell you.
And you're not having to worry about controlling your own dog or keeping the dogs apart or that sort of thing. They're cooling their jets out in the car somewhere.
Exactly. So you can really focus as a student on what you're seeing in front. And it is a game of observation. This is like the fine print in dogs, because what you'll begin to see is dogs' behavior changes as they come to the odor, even before they reward themselves. You know, you'll see the tail change, you'll see a respiration rate that you'll hear, you know, will be faster or slower, ears forward, ears back.
You read everything about the dog.
You read everything, and I think, Martha, this is the biggest reason that we see such profound changes in the relationships between people and dogs.
Well, you
dogs,
learn how to work with a dog.
Well, and dogs have been throwing off this language all the time.
And the people didn't
know verbal,
what it means.
We're verbal. We have no idea. We're yammering at them in English. They're struggling to learn to speak English, these dogs. Now, with this kind of an observational skill set, people are learning to speak dog.
Well, and isn't it wonderful, folks, that Miriam is doing this teaching? Because it's not like she was someone that just learned how to train dogs and then picked up this nose work stuff. Your whole background, you've been training dogs, working dogs individually for scent work for years and years.
For a dozen years now.
And so you totally understand this language with dogs and how to work with it. And how fabulous that you're the one that brought nose work here.
You're very kind. Thank you. It's been a lot of work.
But I mean, it's really, really true because, I mean, I see it so often, you know, I'm always mouthing off about, you know, I mean, there's a gazillion dog trainers out there now. And, you know, I mean, you can sign up and learn how to be a dog trainer, you know, in 5 minutes. But that doesn't mean you can deal with most of what you're going to encounter. But anyway, but I think it's just phenomenal that your background led you to this. I mean, it's obviously that you're following your path and you're guided as to what you're doing. Now, let me ask you this. If people are thinking, well, that sounds like fun. I'd sort of like to do that. Are there age restrictions on the dog? Are there breed restrictions? Are there training requirements? Do they have to have obedience training? What can anybody just sign up? How do we get into a class? I mean,
Martha, that's a fabulous, fabulous set of questions, because what it points out is this is a universally accessible sport. We have dogs in carts because their rear ends are not functional anymore.
Oh,
we have blind dogs. We have deaf dogs.
Blind dogs. Deaf dogs.
Oh, heavens, yes. We've got dogs with end-stage cancer treatment and in chemotherapy. I've had dogs with vestibular syndrome, which is kind of like being really drunk and wearing someone else's glasses on a rolling boat.
Wow.
Tremendous. And people of all ages and abilities as well. You know, I've got a fantastically dedicated and very talented student team. The woman is frank in admitting her age, and she's in her upper 70s. And she runs a terrific little 10-year-old Coton de Tulare. And
that's a little fluffy model.
Little white
sort of like
fluffy
a Bichon.
Dog, who is a hunting machine. I call her a little white Rottweiler. She is a team cannot be stopped.
Any age.
Yep. Any
now
age.
Now what about
it needs
are
to
there
be,
obedience requirements
no,
or
it's
anything?
An obedience free zone.
Oh.
You leave obedience at the door, you leave guilt at the door.
Okay, so you don't even have to have trained them
before. Oh, no. In fact, this is a fabulous annealing experience for people who have new dogs, whether adopted from shelter. And imagine what this would mean to shelter dogs who are in confinement.
Oh, God,
to have
yeah.
some outlet for really
yeah.
who they are.
So it's really anybody listening. Now, is there a minimum age? Like, can they come at 8 weeks or 12
I've had
weeks?
Puppies.
Or four?
I've had puppy classes, which are a hoot and a half. And, of course, everything has to be tighter to the level of the dog, and certainly puppies have a very limited attention span. But the nice thing about puppies is they have no inhibitions.
Yeah, that's
and they
for
haven't
sure.
learned any manners yet, generally.
Uh-huh.
I've got a number of dogs who are just top dogs in competition now who started with me as puppies and have grown up in the sport. And I will say,
do you do specific puppy classes, or do all ages just join
all ages?
All ages.
The puppies need to have their inoculations.
And that must mean, because you work with them individually at a time, you can cater the individual session while everybody else is watching.
Exactly.
To the individual.
I've had some puppy classes, you know, strategically designed for puppies, but in fact, not everybody gets puppies at the same time of year. So because it is so accessible for all dogs and all types of dogs, Martha, you know, even the brachiocephalic breeds like pugs and bulldogs, boxers, you know, they still have the same equipment. It's
so
not
truly any dog, any breed,
any breed of the hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of dogs I've taught in 1,500 classes over 2.5 years, I've only had 4 dogs that did not get this. Only 4. And 2 of them were seizure alert dogs. And I believe that's because for those dogs, they were not going to leave off their job with their person to do anything. Those people told me that the dogs would do this at home, but they would not leave them in class. And frankly, it's a bigger job than finding cookies and boxes.
Sure.
And the other 2 dogs were very old and very ill. And really too ill to come to class. And I had to ask the people to, you know, sometimes, Martha, how that kind of aging comes on so gradually that people don't really see it.
Oh, yeah. But I do also like the fact, though, that a lot of disabled dogs, you said blind dogs, deaf dogs you said
carts.
Dogs that have disabilities could do this.
And are so full of joy.
Well,
so
because,
joy.
You know, and I think, you know, when you think about it, folks, when you have a disability of some sort, even humans, if your life becomes over, you don't have a functional activity, you can't do anything, you lose hope, you lose your desire, you lose quality of life. And that's what it's all about with our animal friends,
Absolutely.
Is whether or not you keep them going. Well, this might be a way to add some quality to the life of those dogs and give them a reason.
Exactly.
For doing
it
things.
Is a reason for being. And I've
So with a class, is it like an obedience because it's like 6 weeks or 8 weeks? Do you come once a month or once a week?
People
to start
come once
with?
A week. Class sessions for me are 6 weeks long. Each class lasts an hour and a half because each dog team is worked individually. Class size is kept limited to generally no more than 8 dogs if I don't have an assistant because each team is run individually. And the goal is to have multiple run-throughs each class session, because what happens, Martha, is that let's say that you're in a class, Martha, you brought your dog and you're the first team that's in. The other dogs are all in their, you know, properly equipped vehicles. The other handlers are in the room. They're watching your dog do the run through. I always stop the dogs before the interest peaks, so the dog is left wanting more. You go put your dog back up in the car. And guess what happens during that time? Your dog is processing what happened. Your dog is watching the other dogs come and go and knows what it's missing every time it sees a dog come and go. Next run through, you bring your dog out, the drive is that much higher. And then that much higher the next time.
And I find it's interesting. They learn that they're working in specific equipment, too.
Yes, like very contextual.
Like that's what Colleen and I kind of started that back with our dogs early on. We put different equipment on them, different collar and leash for confirmation showing, different one for obedience, different one for field, because we were told when we started doing that work with our animals and, you know, in the ancient times, that you couldn't do all those different things with the same dog.
Pish-posh.
And, of course, you know, Colleen and I were young, sassy teenagers and said, you know, well, baloney.
Watch me.
Watch us. And we did. Mm-hmm. And consequently, we weren't liked so much for a while.
Dogs are contextual learners. And
for
that communication to be really effective, you have separate cues, you have separate work gear, just like we have separate uniforms. Yep. And you know how.
And you know wear Martha, different hats like we talk about it.
Exactly. And you know how your dogs know what their day is going to be like based on what you're putting together for yourself in the morning. Is she putting on her radio clothing? Is she putting on let's go have fun clothing?
Yeah.
It applies to this as well.
All right. We're going to take care of our advertisers and sponsors. But when we continue, I'm going to push off current events till the next hour. So we have the rest of this hour with Miriam. Then I want to know what areas around you teach, where are classes available. I want to know how much they cost. I want to know where we go. You know, we start searching for treats or toys in boxes, where do we go from there? And I know there's different scents that we look at, and where does it progress? And then I want to know about how many classes do you think we have to take to get where we're going? Or is it like, you know, you can train forever? So that's what I want to cover and before we're done. All right. We are, please pay attention. The most important part of the show is coming up. Without our advertisers and sponsors, there is no us. So please pay attention, support them, and thank them for supporting Animal World. Animal World continues right here on Alternative Talk, AM 1150. Hey, did you know that even if you feed the highest quality all-natural foods, even if you home cook for your animal friends, the ingredients in that food is exposed to heat, light, and oxygen, and that begins to destroy a lot of the important stuff. Well, that's why Designing Health created Missing Link. Now, they start with human-grade, all whole-natural raw food sources. They've perfected a way to protect it from heat, light, and oxygen. It comes to us in a resealable gold foil pouch. You keep it in the refrigerator once you've opened it. Mix up your animal friend's food, add in the Missing Link, a little cool water to mix it up, and voila, you've added what's missing, like the balanced omega-3 and 6 oils, the enzymes in the raw ingredients, the fiber. Missing Link tends to eliminate excessive shedding problems in dogs. It eliminates hair bulk problems in cats. And there is a couple of different formulas for dogs. There's a cat formula. There's a vegetarian formula, and you can feed that to both your dogs and cats and other house critters as well, like rabbits, guinea pigs, hamsters, and the like. There is a bird formula and a horse formula, and there is Missing Link with glucosamine for connective tissue and joint support in a dog and horse formula. So I want you to ask for the Missing Link wherever you shop for premium pet supplies, or ask your vet, or you can go directly to Designing Health, and you can call them at 1-800-774-7387. That's 1-800-774-7387, or visit them online at www.designinghealth.com.
Massage is good for everyone, including your pets. Learn animal massage and check out the Northwest School of Animal Massage's exciting new Vashon Island location. The Northwest School of Animal Massage offers a full schedule of classes, including massage for canines, small and large animal certification, and the exciting new manual ligament therapy series. Go to nwsam.com for registration details and to enroll online. For more information, call 877-836-3703. Locally, call 206-463-1425. That's 206-463-1425. Or check them out on Facebook.
Does your dog experience bad breath or gas? Does your cat spit up hairballs? Try Optigest. Optigest is a natural formula of digestive enzymes and the prebiotic FOS. Even pets with a healthy diet can experience digestive upset due to diet change, separation, or the normal aging process. Optigest works fast and has no inactive ingredients. Optigest supports intestinal balance and a healthy immune system to promote more comfortable, active, and vibrant dogs and cats. Ask for Optigest at your natural pet store today.
The Robin Alexis Mystic Store is now open. Are you looking for metaphysical gifts for yourself or your friends and loved ones, but don't want to spend too much? Visit the Mystic Store at robinalexis.com, where you can find a number of items under $25. Do you or your loved ones like to read? You can purchase autographed copies of Robin's books. Do you love crystals? The Mystic Store has very powerful Lemurian healing crystals that Reiki Master Robin Alexis has personally given a healing attunement to at the sacred sites on Mount Shasta. Are you or someone you know longing to get pregnant? Robin has assisted many women in becoming pregnant. Purchase a gift certificate for a personal phone reading with this metaphysical mother and fertility expert to assist with that pregnancy. Visit the Mystic Store for your metaphysical needs now at robinalexis.com or call Bob at 530-859-2499.
Hi, this is Martha. Did you know that besides hosting Animal World, I'm also an animal behavior therapist and trainer with more than 40 years of professional experience? I work with you privately in your home or over the phone to help you understand your animal friends and resolve whatever behavior, training, or healing problems you've got going on. Most of my expertise is with cats and dogs, but I sometimes work with other types of animals as well. So whether it's puppies or kittens, adult dogs or cats, or elderly animal issues, I can help. Cats not using the litter box? Biting or scratching you or your furniture? Maybe they're fighting with each other or waking you up at night. I've got answers. Dogs barking too much, jumping, or dragging you around the block on your walk? Does he have separation anxiety or chew up stuff he shouldn't? I've got answers. Whatever's going on with your animal friends, I will help you fix it. I am more than reasonably priced and often need to see you only once. I always do a free, no-obligation telephone evaluation, so give me a call and bug my voicemail if you need immediate attention. You'll find me at Martha's Canine, Feline, and All Creature Counseling at 360-217-7258. That's 360-217-7258, and I'd love to hear from you.
Get your smile on with Alternative Talk 1150.
Hey y'all, I'm Martha Norwalk, and I'm sorry to say we're winding down the second hour of this week's edition of Animal World. We do not call it the fastest 3 hours in radio for nothing. And my guest in the studio today is Miriam Rose. She is the dog nose lady, and she teaches the nose work classes, and that's what we're learning about. And I want to, Miriam, get right back to that subject. And we've been talking about the classes, and we can go to classes now. And it's like going to obedience school, except that one dog, one handler. There are no requirements. Any dog, any breed, any age, well, as long as they're old enough to, you know, be vaccinated.
Have had their vaccinations, correct. And the dogs are not a menace to humans.
Yeah. And in that case, you and I'm giving her my cards. Mm-hmm. You come see Aunt Martha first, and you let me straighten that out. Remember, that's how I met Miriam. I was there not because I needed to be, but because everybody knew this dog before I got involved. Mm-hmm. And all of the trainers and the handlers were afraid to be in the same room with the dog. So I had to be there. And, of course, Bandit is fabulous, isn't he?
Well, you had done a lot of work with the dog before I let him into full class. He was doing privates with Joan Fetty. And he was doing a lot of work with you and you with his owners and with him. And finding out that he was a Plekner dog made a big difference.
Oh, well, that
and nose work has made a big difference in his life, Joyce will tell you.
Yeah, he was so classic that he would not have been retrievable had he not been a Plekner dog.
Amen.
Or he certainly wouldn't be in doing what he's doing now. But anyway, it's individual, but their training's not required ahead of time. Any breed. Any age, as long as they have vaccines. It's a 6-week class once a week, takes about an hour and a half. Mm-hmm. Now, how about locations? Where do you teach around the area?
Teaching in Woodinville. I'm teaching in Squim. I have negotiations in place for a facility in Seattle and a facility in Linwood. And I'm also looking at Kitsap County. I have a lot of trainers who are taking coursework from me. I've started a mentee up in British Columbia. And got her started teaching classes, got another mentee started teaching classes on Whidbey Island. Oh. Both of these people are certified instructors at this point.
Super.
My website is www.nwnoseworks.com, and it's best to contact me via that website about class locations and when classes are next starting. We're on a 2-week break right now between classes. And frankly, what happens with a lot of my student groups is they form their own cohorts and have practice groups.
Now, we do have some listeners that are really into their animal friends, but they ain't into computers. Is there a phone number that we can get?
I'll give my office phone number at home is 206-362-4163. And I know that ain't into computer stuff. I'm always a late adopter of technology.
She's not a Greek like me. We will repeat that contact information before we close this hour. So get your pens and papers. Yes.
Also, I wanted to make mention that for the second year in a row, I've been invited to demonstrate canine nose work at the Seattle Kennel Club show.
Yes.
The big dog show for our region that is upcoming this next weekend. And on Saturday and on Sunday next weekend, my students will be demonstrating canine nose work at 10:30. At the demonstration ring at the Seattle Kennel Club Dog Show downtown in what used to be called the Quest Event Center, and I'm afraid I don't know its new name.
Oh, Michael, no. What is the Quest Event Center now, Mike?
It's the CenturyLink Event Center.
CenturyLink. And isn't that the one that's across from the Mariners from Safeco?
Actually, it's due west of the stadium.
Yeah,
but
it's kind of like
in the stadium district.
So it's in the CenturyLink building, And it's next Saturday and Sunday at Seattle Kennel Club. Mm-hmm. And you will be in the demonstration ring on Saturday and Sunday at 10:30
a.m. in the morning. Yeah, we had a great time doing it last year.
And go on Saturday, folks. You need to be with me. Of course, you could listen on the way and then go in for an hour and then come back out. Or you listen to the archives. But
there you go.
That's the way you can. The nice thing is we have archives now. So we've got lots of different locations. You're in a two-week break now, and they can contact you via website or phone number. We'll get that out again.
Welcome to, yes. And I really, whether or not you take classes, I want you to consider, I want your listeners to consider giving the gift of some kind of scent work to their dogs.
Okay, and let's talk briefly about, we know we started with a toy or a treat in cardboard boxes in the room, and then where does it go from there?
That's throughout the first 6 weeks, and that's to encourage the dog's hunt drive to bloom and the dog's confidence to bloom. Remember, the dogs we have in classes are not the dogs I choose for professional work. You don't want to live with the dogs I choose.
Right.
You
know, we're talking about dogs that end up in professional work are, they're so energetic, they're so driven, they can't just live as a domestic canine.
Exactly. So what we're doing in this first 6 weeks is letting the hunt drive in your companion animals bloom, and letting them build their own confidence. And if you think about it, if a dog self-rewards, the timing is perfect because we're not involved as humans.
Okay.
So the dogs get 6 weeks of those basics, and then if the dog has met that criteria that I have, which is that people hunt with their dogs in six other settings, then they can move on to introduction to odor, which is where the dog and the handler are introduced to the first odor. And in this case, that's the odor of sweet birch. Pardon me, there are three botanical scents that the dogs ultimately are taught to recognize: sweet birch, anise, and clove.
Interesting.
You know, perfectly legal, perfectly safe.
Mm-hmm.
And then the dogs and the handlers progress through there with their skill sets. Martha and I were speaking during the break about competitions. There are canine nosework competitions. I helped to host the first canine nosework trial in the Seattle region in Shoreline last summer, and I host mock trials regionally to get people ready for practice. My focus is not on competition. My focus is on what this sport does for dogs and their people.
But if you really like it and you've got ego involved, you can compete.
Well, I have to say, you know, we have to have enough ego to stand up and walk and talk during the day, and it's not a bad thing. And when people find that they and their dog are a real team, this is a little virus that catches hold of them, and they just have more and more fun at it. Well, yes,
I got burned out about it because the world of like confirmation competition, you know, really has kind of gotten out of control. But you know, and it's difficult to be involved with if you really don't know what you're doing. But this kind of stuff would be great fun to compete with.
Well, and in the competitions, what's very unlike other kinds of competitive dog sports is that the dog always wins. Even if you choose the wrong location, if you call alert on a spot where the odor hasn't been hidden, the judge will guide you and your dog to the correct location. So the dog is always, always, always rewarded.
Well, that's cool. Now, start to sort of finish. If the first class was all the food and the boxes or the toy and learn it, and then we graduate to the three to learn the three scents and be relatively proficient. Like the second time I joined class is that we went on a field trip because you were using a fire station,
the fire training center in Duval,
and so and a class of dogs. We all went out there, and then you had put different scents in three different places, like, you know, a part of the fire building, and then a trailer, and then someplace else, and the dogs
where the human sized dummies and human weight dummies were.
Yeah, they got to search three different areas. It was fascinating to see them. But let's say class wise, first class to all three scents and being pretty proficient. How long? I know it's not the same for every dog, but
it's not the same for every dog, and it is one of those sports that people just get hooked on and just keep wanting to pursue because there is always another layer of depth to get to.
So you know, it can be never ending.
But you know, you can play just with your dogs at home with boxes and cookies and have happy, contented dogs. You don't even have to go to a class for that.
And cost of class?
Cost of classes range between $140 and $160 per session. And again, that's an hour and a half class. It's not a 50-minute or an hour long class.
And that's for not each week. That's for the whole series.
Oh, yes, that's for the whole series. Thank you for the clarification.
And what kind of payment do you accept?
I accept basically cash or checks.
Okay.
Yeah, very simplistic. Again, I'm not such an early adopter or even a late adopter, as it turns out, of technology.
Any kind of payment, like payment spread out through the 6 weeks for anybody? So it's pay up front. Cash or check?
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
All right. Well, unfortunately, we're out of time, and this is such fascinating. Well, wouldn't it be fun to have Miriam come back sometime and especially talk about some of the other jobs that she's had over the years with scenting dogs and more on the cruise ships and the bombs and the all that kind of drugs and all that sort of stuff. So,
well, and I'd like to just say in closing, Martha, mm-hmm. and I do really appreciate the invitation to be here.
You're welcome.
Want to encourage people that no matter what venue they use, to give their dogs the ability and the opportunity to express really who the dog is at the dog's pace and in honoring that dog's process. That's, for me, the biggest gift in this, is that I get to share that with people and their dogs.
All right. So if you are interested in nose work for your dog, you can check out the website, www.nwnoseworks.com, nwnoseworks.com, or you can call Miriam at 206-362-4163. That's 206-362-4163. And if you can arrange it, get down to Seattle Kennel Club show next Saturday or Sunday. They're at the a Century Link Center down where all the, you know, hoopla sporting stuff is. They will be in the demonstration ring at 10:30 both days. Miriam Rose, thank you for joining us on Animal World. We'll look forward to your next visit, and you have great fun with those dogs. All right, we're done with this hour. We'll be back straight ahead right here on Alternative Talk, AM 1150.
The preceding hour of Martha Norwalk's Animal World was brought to you by Jones & Company Pets. Their goal is happy, satisfied customers enjoying happy, healthy pets.